Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine, the PaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times bestselling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
How are you feeling today?
I'm awake.
That is like 100% improvement over yesterday.
So, I apologize for my tardiness. We're trying to probably scramble to get the podcast out on time this week because you needed time because your daughter's birthday on our usual recording day. And then the next day, you got a text from Matt that said, Stacey's in bed.
So I was trying to figure out if it was for sure from Matt because the text message said something to the effect of, Stacey has a fever and went to bed. Text Matt if you have any questions. And I was like, the fact that he talked to him about himself in like the third person, I was like, wait, so is this Matt texting me or is this not Matt texting me? I'm not entirely sure. But now I have confirmation. It was Matt just referring to himself in the third person.
Indeed. And the reason that I went to bed is because I could feel myself getting some sort of ick. Like, I don't know if it was a cold or fighting the flu or what, but I was like, nuh-uh, I do not have time for this in my life right now. I cannot get sick. I'm going to go to bed. And I had a bazillion things to do, including the podcast, which we almost never cancel. And I was like, no, I need to do all this stuff. And Matt's like, you're going to bed. Put me to bed. Yeah. Told me he'd take care of everything else. And he did. So we're back today. And I'm happy to report that I'm feeling fine. So, I mean,
I can sound very chipper.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got 13 hours sleep.
Oh, I don't even know what that would feel like anymore.
It was pretty fantastic. So,
well, it turned out to be a pretty good thing that you were not available to record last night because I developed rainouts last night and I was kind of freaked out that my hands were blue. And so I wouldn't have been in a very good place for recording a podcast because my hands were blue. And that was not cool with me. So
what's going on with you lately?
Right. So for anybody who listens to the podcast, but is maybe not like subscribing to my newsletter or like really up on top of my blog posts, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis last week. I'm pretty sure that this is actually my primary autoimmune disease, and I'm pretty sure I've had it since I was 7 or 8 years old. When I look back at the symptoms that were just things that I lived with my whole life, but were pretty much, you know, 9 out of 10 symptoms on a checklist for Hashimoto's thyroiditis, they started after I had mono for 6 months when I was 7. And Epstein-Barr is a virus that dramatically increases your risk of certain autoimmune diseases, and Hashimoto's is one of them. And I have a lot of anger associated with that realization because that means I've had this disease for 3 decades. And It's the reason why, even though I was a highly active kid who, you know, walked a mile and a half to the bus stop and home from the bus stop every day, and then would go out on my bike and ride my bike for a couple of hours after school and go for 4, 5, 6 hour bike rides with my brothers on the weekend. And we came from a family, like, we weren't paleo because, like, who knew about paleo in the 70s and 80s? But my mom was like, crunchy granola, and we ate all like whole foods, unprocessed foods, organic. We got our vegetables from the local organic farm. Our dairy was grass fed. Our meat was organic. Our eggs were from a local farm. Like, we fished our own fish. We grew our own vegetables. And so, you know, I always blamed myself for my weight gain, and I always thought it was my fault. And, you know, we went through quite a big family crisis for a couple of years at around the same time as I was, I think, showing these symptoms the most. And like, I had stopped growing at 10 years old and some other things that I think would have been noticed if there hadn't been so much going on in my family. And I had twice in my once in my early 20s and once in my later 20s where I had abnormal thyroid results show up on a blood test, and I had a doctor kind of say, "Yeah, it's probably nothing, and we'll just watch it." And I just look at, you know, what it was like to be an overweight teenager, and the fact that I was bullied and teased mercilessly, what it was like to be a teenager who, like, willingly went to bed at 8 o'clock at night because I was so tired. I mean, it actually probably kept me out of trouble because I was too tired to, like, do all the things my friends were doing. But I look at all of those things, and as much as those things made me who I am now, and it was these health battles that brought me to paleo and brought me to blogging and brought me to writing books, and it's like, you know, why I'm doing the really awesome things that I'm doing now, I still have this anger that I had to go through it. And when I look back now, I realize that, you know, a doctor with a different philosophy or a family with a different philosophy. I came from a family that really just felt like everything was on the normal spectrum. And, you know, there's so much autoimmune disease in my family that within my family, it was normal. So I just, it's been a hard week in terms of that realization. Then it's been a hard week because of just having the symptoms of a Hashimoto's flare, not being on thyroid hormone replacement yet. So, I mean, I started, you know, people who've been following me for a while know that, you know, as things started to get really stressful with the paleo approach was when I started feeling less energy. It's when I started gaining weight that wasn't explainable. And when I went to a functional medicine doctor about this time last year, we did a bunch of tests. My thyroid came back on the low end of normal, but my adrenals were completely burnt out. So at that time, we thought that my thyroid function was suppressed because of my adrenal glands, and that if we brought my adrenal glands back up, my thyroid would come back up. And then my hair started falling out in June, and We ended up, you know, doing some things to support that, and it didn't really help. And then after we went on our big book tour in November, I figured that my adrenal glands had crashed again because I came back from that with no energy, huge susceptibility to infection. I basically went from, you know, cold to flu to strep throat to cold for 2 solid months. And, started putting on weight again, not explainable by, you know, changes in eating habits. And I stopped sleeping well, and my energy really tanked. And so we retested, and this time my thyroid came back. My adrenal glands have actually recovered, which is great. But my thyroid levels were low, and I had high antithyroglobulin antibodies, which is a definitive diagnosis for Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So so I've started on Armour, which is one of the more natural thyroid medication options. It's basically desiccated porcine thyroid gland. So it has whole, like it has everything in it. So it's not just T4, not just T3, but it's got T4 and T3 and T2 and T1 and everything, like everything that you would find in a thyroid. But it takes a month to 2 months to even start to feel the effects. And it's like the 6 to 8 week mark where you can even start to gauge whether or not the dose is right. So this is, you know, one of those things that I've helped so many people get through this like horrible part of Hashimoto's diagnosis where you just have to wait and be patient while you spend months, if not years, dialing in your dose and dialing in your medications correctly. Because, you know, from here, there's lots of options. So if this isn't sufficient, we can add a straight T4 if my conversion rate's good. Like there's so much different tinkering that we can do. And unfortunately for me, there's not a whole lot of tinkering I could do in terms of diet. My diet's really dialed in. I'm back to strict autoimmune protocol. I've given up all caffeine. Like I'm not even drinking decaf coffee, like zero caffeine. And I'm sleeping, you know, I'm in bed for 9 or 10 hours a night. So I'm like, I'm doing all of the things. So it's just a question of, you know, what stress and lack of sleep just sort of broke me and then giving myself time to recover. And I'm normally a fairly patient person. I'm normally a person who, if I get stuck in a traffic jam or I'm in a long queue at the grocery store, like I just kind of roll with it, but I'm finding myself not feeling patient with this and I don't have a choice. And then last night I developed potentially, when I went to the doctor this morning, my oxygenation was really good in my hands. So it may not have been true Raynaud's. It might have been some other kind of blood flow changes in my hands. But when my hands went blue yesterday, I really just felt like, WTF. I'm really frustrated and I'm really ready for the health effects of writing 2 books to be over. And it's, sorry.
It's all right. I know it's tough to talk about.
It's kind of a hard thing because I feel, you know, it's a very private thing to be diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, but at the same time, I've been very public about it because I really feel like this is a grieving process that a lot of people go through. And it's been something that I've, you know, I've counseled people through, and I want people to understand that this sense of frustration is completely normal. And it's, the sense of impatience is completely normal. The sense of anger is completely normal. And that weird sense of relief too, right? Like, so there's all of this anger, and then there's this huge sense of relief that it's one of the autoimmune diseases that there is a good medication option for, because that's not the case for all autoimmune. In fact, that's the case for the vast minority of autoimmune diseases. And it's an autoimmune disease that doesn't affect life expectancy, right? Like there's all kinds of really awesome news associated with this. So there's this weird conflict of emotions, but I feel very, you know, my part of it is I right now am suffering the very stereotypical symptoms of Hashimoto's thyroiditis of crippling fatigue and extreme joint pain. It feels like someone just sprinkled shards of glass in all of my joints, and muscle weakness and lack of coordination. And I don't know if I have brain fog or if I'm just kind of mad, because I'm definitely like, I'm really easily distracted, but I think that's not necessarily like a Hashimoto symptom just so much as a like the emotional aspect of going through diagnosis symptom, where like I'd just far rather be reading my book than, you know, answering emails.
I'm going to say that I read this book called The Paleo Approach. I don't know if you've heard of it, but there's a very strong case to be made for the positive effects of just reading a book sometimes instead of worrying about work and email.
There is a whole section on just that. So I've been in, you know, real basic mode and letting my team, you know, really keep things going for me this past nearly week, while I, you know, spend more time with my husband and my kids and read my book. I'm reading the Divergent series. What a horrible thing to, that's a worse confession than I have a Hashimoto's. I'm reading the Divergent series. I'm halfway through the third book. I'll probably be done with the third book tomorrow.
I knew that already.
Did you already know that I was reading? Oh yeah, you did know that I was reading that. I was reading the first book while we were on tour. Well, now I'm halfway through the third book and quite enjoying it. Go teen romance, dystopic future genre, because apparently it's a genre now. So I'm frustrated, and I will be okay, everybody. And I'm good friends with all of the thyroid experts, handily enough. So I've had this huge influx of emails from people if you need my help, let me know. And I've got great doctors, and I'm kind of, one of the world's leading experts on autoimmune disease. So I really, really know what to do. But I'm just in that.
Can I ask a question on behalf of our listeners then? Because I think for me, the one question that I think people can benefit from the most is this idea of how many undiagnosed autoimmune diseases there are, which you've articulated in the Paleo Approach and I think on your blog and other places, right? How many people are living with autoimmune diseases that are undiagnosed? And I myself believe that this might be a condition that I have. I've talked before about, I've kind of reached a plateau. I've done everything I can. I exercise, I eat clean, I don't lose weight. So for those people, who are struggling with kind of wondering the way that, someone like you with all the knowledge that you have and everything that you knew about yourself and all the tests that you've undergone, what could someone learn from the experience that you've had about how this could possibly have been discovered earlier? Is there anything kind of, I don't want to say good to be gained from this, because ultimately I think the best thing to be gained from this is that hopefully your health will improve, right?
Right.
Hopefully we can manage this autoimmune condition for you now that we know about it. Great thing is, once we find these things out, we can treat them. But from the perspective of kind of our listeners who suspect that they have an autoimmune disease and are going through the same kind of thing that you've been through over the last year, kind of going through testing and trying to find things out, or someone like myself who just kind of suspects, something's not right, I should probably see someone about that. I guess, what would be your words of wisdom in terms of what you've learned through this process?
So if I, it's interesting for me because there's been several times in my life where I've been sure I had hypothyroidism before I even know what happened. Knew what Hashimoto's thyroiditis was. And my doctor would run the test and it would come back normal. And so what's standard for a doctor to run a test for thyroid is to either just test thyroid stimulating hormone or TSH, which is actually produced by the pituitary gland, not even the thyroid gland, or to run the combination of TSH and T4. And T4 is the pro-hormone. So the thyroid produces T4 and then T4 is converted in T3. So T4 some people call it inactive, and it's not truly inactive. It has a low level of activity. When it's converted in T3, T3 is highly active. So T3 is, T3 is the really important one, but you need T4 in order to make T3. And T4 is made from iodine. And that's why iodine deficiency can mess up your thyroid. So when you have a thyroid condition, typically that means suppressed T4 function. And then if you have gut problems or, a stressed out liver, that's when you can suppress. That's actually where most of the conversion from T4 to T3 is. And so that's where you might have a normal thyroid function but suppressed T3. And I've always had a normal TSH. So what typically happens in Hashimoto's is something is attacking the thyroid and reducing the thyroid's ability to make T4. Therefore, there's less T4 to convert to T3. And then that sends signals back to the pituitary gland that there's not enough thyroid hormone, and the pituitary gland secretes extra thyroid stimulating hormone. And then you get this high thyroid stimulating hormone. So that's the classic pattern of hypothyroidism, but it's not the only pattern. So there's actually, half a dozen different ways that you can have hypothyroidism, and it shows up differently with the different numbers on a test. So if you just measure TSH and T4, you're just getting a very, very small piece of the picture. So I've had always a normal TSH. My TSH is normal, although slightly higher than what's considered the, you know, functional medicine optimal range. Like, functional medicine has a tighter range for what they look at compared to the reference ranges that labs use that and doctors use. But I've had low T4 before. And because my TSH was normal, the doctor was like, we'll just watch that. And so if I knew what I knew now, I would say, how about let's do a full thyroid panel? So what a full thyroid panel does is it tests TSH and T4, but it also tests T3. It tests reverse T3. So a certain amount of T4 gets made into reverse T3, and reverse T3 is an inactive form of T3, and it's basically used for regulating thyroid. It's one of the ways that the thyroid sort of regulates how active it is. But if you're stressed, for example, you shuttle more T4 into reverse T3, and that's one of the ways that stress actually inhibits thyroid function. So you would test reverse T3, and then you would test for antibodies against the two antibodies that are known to be thyroid proteins that are attacked by the autoimmune system in Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So you would test against antibodies against thyroglobulin and antibodies against thyroid peroxidase, or TPO. And so that's what's considered a full thyroid panel. And it's much more instructive because it actually tells you a lot about whether it's the thyroid, whether it's the pituitary gland. So you can actually have low thyroid function, but it has nothing to do with the thyroid. It has to do with the pituitary gland not sending the right signals. It tells you if your conversion is good. So that tells you about gut health and liver health. And that can also tell you if there's stress, if you're getting a lot of reverse T3. And then there's the antibodies, which is what makes it definitive for Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And approximately 90% of hypothyroidism is caused by Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So for me, when I got this full thyroid panel, and it was really like the full thyroid panel, but after my adrenal glands had sort of come back online. So there's a huge crosstalk between adrenal glands and thyroid. And basically what was happening was my adrenal burnout was masking the thyroid symptoms and, you know, actually allowing my thyroid to function a bit better because it was also suppressing my immune system. So we weren't able to measure the antibodies until the adrenal glands came back online. So it was almost like fix the adrenal fatigue, and it's like lifting a curtain off of the hypothyroidism and being able to see that. I've actually talked with several other people who've had the exact same thing happen, that they went to functional medicine or a naturopath because of, you know, adrenal issues. They got diagnosed with, chronic adrenal insufficiency, or what we colloquially call adrenal fatigue. They do a program, you know, supplements and sleeping and whatever to fix their adrenals. The adrenals come back online, and then they can find out that they have hypothyroidism. So that, you know, if you suspect low thyroid and you're that TSH and T4 is coming back normal, the thing to ask for is a full thyroid panel. And then the thing to do with those numbers is to find, I think the Institute of Functional Medicine has a few articles, but there's definitely a few around online. I think Chris Kresser has some of this information, which is not what the lab ranges are, but what is considered optimal. So what the lab ranges are sort of based on an average of people, but an average is not the same as healthy or normal. So then there's these studies that have been done to sort of narrow in on what the optimal ranges are, and then looking at your numbers in comparison to those optimal ranges. And if you have measurable antibodies, then that's definitive diagnosis for Hashimoto's. So what happened for me was my TSH is still normal, but my T4 and my T3 are low. An endocrinologist might look at them and think that, especially that my T3 is okay and my T4 is just right on the bottom of the lab range. But when you look at what those optimal ranges are, they're very low compared to what an optimal range is. And then I have high antibodies. So it's part of it is working with a doctor who's really in tune with not just thyroid function, but how thyroid feeds into the pituitary gland and the adrenal glands, and even sex hormones and how all of those things are interlinked. Because sometimes, you know, what's happening is people will not actually have the two extremes, right? So people have hypothyroidism and they're not getting diagnosed because it's, you know, not affecting TSH or T4, or it's affecting them, but not outside of the lab ranges. So it's not so extreme. Or the other thing is people get diagnosed with hypothyroidism, sometimes even based on symptoms and not even on a lab test. And really what it is chronic stress and adrenal fatigue, and that suppresses the thyroid as well. So, you know, being able to tease out, you know, having a physician who's able to tease out those differences is really, really important. And I don't think I recognized that even that there was that, you know, like I don't think I even realized that my doctor might not be able to tell me that until I really started this journey into paleo and alternative medicine and functional medicine, integrative medicine. So Hashimoto's thyroiditis, there are reports that are very conservative that say about 1 in 125 people have it. It is the most common autoimmune disease. There are other estimates that it may affect as much as 8% of people, predominantly women. So it's like somewhere in that range of 0.25% to 8%. There's some people who really believe that, you know, subclinical and clinical hypothyroidism is the epidemic that's actually behind things like obesity. Affects your cardiovascular health, it affects your ability to regulate blood sugars, it affects your ability to handle stress, it affects your sleep, it affects your energy level, it affects your appetite, it affects your cravings. Like, it really, the thyroid is such a phenomenally important organ because it controls so much in our bodies. Like, it controls metabolism, which is sort of its main thing that it controls, but it also controls a variety of other things. So it feeds into the pancreas. So it controls insulin and insulin sensitivity. It feeds into the adrenal glands. That it affects our responses to stress. It feeds into sex hormone production. It feeds in the cardiovascular system. It controls blood pressure and heart rate. And there's, you know, receptors for thyroid hormones in every single cell. So it really, you know, it impacts how every cell in your body is using energy. So it impacts basically how healthy every single cell is and how efficient every single cell in your body is at doing its job. It affects neurotransmitter production and receptors for neurotransmitters. It affects nerve conductance. So there's basically every single system in the body is affected by thyroid health. And so when you have a disease that affects your thyroid, whether that's hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism, basically that's why the symptoms are so, like, every system, like, it, cause it's because it affects pretty much everything in your body. So that was pretty much a science with Sarah without being a science with Sarah.
Indeed.
Mm.
Well, I think it's important information though. Like, I think, like, for me personally, when you told me about your diagnosis before even you had shared it with others, I mean, I think my jaw kind of dropped and was like, if Sarah has an undiagnosed autoimmune condition, then the chance of every type A woman personality that I know has one. You know what I mean? Like, it just, and so I think what is beneficial, like I said, beyond just you getting healthy, is the fact that now the medical side of improving autoimmune condition is something that you can personally explore and help people with. Because previously, the autoimmune condition that you were aware that you had, you were managing entirely through diet and lifestyle. It wasn't something that you needed medication to control.
And I may never have known. I mean that this flare was definitely caused by the lifestyle concessions that I made to free up more of my time to write the books. And if I had not been a type A personality and opted to do those things, then I may never have known, you know. And it's one of those interesting things. So one of the most common questions that I get at book signings is from people who are in that diagnostic phase where they don't know what they have yet. They know they feel crummy. They know they have something. They're doing all of these invasive tests. Everything is showing up normal and they feel terrible. And they look at the autoimmune protocol and either they're following it and they're not seeing benefits yet. And then there's always troubleshooting. It's usually they're not eating organ meat or seafood. Right? I'm just dropping that right there. But
we have addressed that at like every talk that we've given.
Right. Point for people when they're not seeing results on the autoimmune protocol is that they're not actually focusing on the nutrient density piece because they have food aversions or, you know, the liver ick factor.
Or the vegetable or the seafood,
right,
ick factor.
Or they're veggie phobic and they're not eating any vegetables. There's usually some really important nutrient dense food that they're not eating for whatever reason. But the other side of that is they're wondering if they should do the autoimmune protocol without a diagnosis. And what I tell them is that, you know, if they are feeling terrible, they're eating a paleo diet and they're still not feeling good, like, what do they have to lose? Because if they're having those symptoms, it means there's inflammation. And the autoimmune protocol isn't just for autoimmune disease. It's for inflammatory conditions, which are all chronic health issues. And that the best case scenario is that you can, you know, regulate your immune system, stop your immune system from attacking your body, stop the inflammation, heal your body and feel great, and never let your disease progress to the point where it's symptoms are obvious enough that you can get a diagnosis. And that's just the sad fact about autoimmune disease, is that a huge majority of them, the only way to diagnose them is to let them get severe enough that it's obvious what you have, and that there just aren't diagnostic tests that are available for every autoimmune disease. And so I tell people, like, it's a huge victory if you never get a diagnosis, because it means you stopped it from progressing that far. And so for part of me, it kind of feels like, I failed at that. I failed at that, you know, diet and lifestyle to regulate my immune system and stop my autoimmune disease from progressing to the point where I can get a diagnosis. And it stings. It's part of the complex web of emotions I have felt this week, because it's such a huge evidence that I have not been taking my own advice. And I haven't been. I have been, you know, when I was working on the books, I was going to bed too late. I was not active enough. I was, you know, highly, highly stressed with deadlines and just the pressure that comes along with writing a book. And it really, really took its toll on me, which is the other major thing that I see when people are following the autoimmune protocol and not seeing results. And it's from, you know, not adequately managing stress and not adequately prioritizing sleep. So just for other people, for just dropping that right there, it seemed to fit. Those are like the biggest points of when people are not seeing results. What are the things that need to be looked at? And so it's definitely good evidence for the importance of chapters 3 and 6 in the paleo approach. I just got visited by a cat and it's really, really cute.
Again, I'm pretty sure that is part of the stress reduction protocol in the paleo approach.
I don't know if pets are identified exactly, but definitely. No, wait, they are on an oxytocin page. They are identified.
And I know Mark Sisson has talked about it. I've read articles not related to paleo about how pets reduce stress. That's why I just keep getting more pets. Like, I think, I don't know at what threshold you pass stress reduction to increase stress of number of times you change litter boxes, but yes. So, Sarah, on behalf of everyone listening, I want to thank you for your honesty in how difficult it is to talk about this stuff and the grieving process that you're going through right now and kind of being honest and open with people about that, it is what you and I have in common and what drew us together, so to speak, within the community, I think. And so, you know, I have such respect for you facing that and being honest. And also, I've seen a lot of your scientific posts and that kind of stuff going up about it. And I think, being that it is the most common autoimmune disease, as you just informed us all, it'll be helpful for a lot of people who are coming to you for the knowledge on that stuff. So,
For me, when I write science posts, it's because I'm writing about whatever I'm researching, and I'm researching something usually because it's something I'm geeking out over and it's something that interests me on a personal level. And so, you know, there will be a lot more thyroid focused science posts in the near future because I'm just reading about it and then I feel like sharing it. But those posts have been resonating with such a huge group of people. So it definitely feels like, it's a nice silver lining, a way of sort of turning the struggles that I'm going through into a really great resource for other people. And, that's why I cry on the Paleo View, because, I really feel like it's important to share this stuff with people, because there's lessons that other people can get out of it. And if people, you know, if even one person can, not have to go through something that I've gone through because I've shared, then that's a victory. So, if you are that person, please let me know so that I can feel like I'm done with the health battles, because clearly that's what I'm waiting for. And before we go on to an official Science with Sarah segment, which will obviously be short now, I do want to say that because of this health crisis, I have decided to cancel or postpone until further notice my book signings that were scheduled for the 24th and 25th in Las Vegas and St. Louis, Missouri. My body is not physically up to that kind of travel right now. So you will be the cities that I visit when my body is up to that travel. And we will definitely organize that when I'm ready. But for right now, I'm too scared of what would happen to me if I did it. And my body is clearly screaming at me very loudly that I need to be taking things down a few notches. So I'm sorry, everybody in Las Vegas and St. Louis. We're sending out emails through. If you've RSVP'd, we're sending you an email to let you know. And then we'll save your emails and let you know when we have it rescheduled and if it's still going to be at Costco, if it's going to be a different bookstore. I just physically can't do it right now. I'm sorry, everybody who was looking forward to meeting me.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
So I've already actually in our intro talked a lot about how the thyroid works. And I talked about the pituitary gland secreting thyroid stimulating hormone, which stimulates the thyroid to produce T4, which is then converted to T3, mostly outside of the thyroid. And I wanted to share a little bit for the Science with Sarah segment on some of the reading that I've been doing about coffee and caffeine and how that impacts the thyroid. And the reason why I found this interesting was because I decided to give up caffeine as a New Year's resolution this year. And the reason why I decided to do that was because I was finding myself increasing my caffeine consumption more and more and more throughout the fall, especially after our November book tour, in order to get myself through the days, to the point where I was drinking like, you know, 3 coffees, 4 coffees, or a few pots of tea a day. Like it was really excessive caffeine consumption. And I knew it wasn't good for me. And so I started before Christmas really trying to sort of wean myself off. And then I was feeling really terrible. And I decided I had to just go cold turkey and cut myself off of caffeine. And I was interested when I got the diagnosis if there was more to the fact that I was craving caffeine as my thyroid was tanking than just the fact that I was trying to keep my energy going and trying to keep myself awake. So I started reading up on the relationship between coffee and the thyroid and the relationship between caffeine and the thyroid. And really, there's a lot more information about caffeine and the thyroid compared to coffee. But what's interesting about coffee is that there are a number of substances in it that interfere with the absorption of thyroid hormone medications. So if you're on any of the spectrum of thyroid hormone medications, coffee is not your friend. And it probably should not be consumed within like 4 hours of taking your thyroid medication, because most people take thyroid medication first thing in the morning. That means you're already not having coffee until lunchtime, which means you're already starting to have caffeine kind of late in the day in terms of getting restful sleep. But what I already knew was that one of the ways that caffeine can suppress thyroid function is through the production of cortisol. So when you drink a caffeinated beverage, that increases your cortisol production, which is your stress hormone. And it also, when you are a habitual coffee drinker especially, your cortisol response to a psychological stressor is magnified. So if you drink coffee every day, the cortisol that you produce in response to that traffic jam when you're late for work is more than somebody who doesn't drink coffee every day hitting the same traffic jam. And so it turns out, I think I already mentioned in our intro, that cortisol suppresses the production of T3 and instead encourages the conversion of the prohormone T4 into reverse T3, which is an inactive form. But cortisol also suppresses the secretion of thyroid-stimulating hormone from the pituitary gland. So it actually is like this double whammy suppression of the thyroid. So caffeine can suppress thyroid sort of indirectly through this, through increasing cortisol. But it also has a direct effect on the thyroid. And it actually does this at the level of the hypothalamus. So the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland together basically control all of the other endocrine glands. So the hypothalamus sends signals to the pituitary, like it secretes hormones that signal to the pituitary, to secrete hormones that signal to the other endocrine glands. So the pituitary gland stimulates thyroid-stimulating hormone. The hypothalamus secretes two different kinds of hormones that stimulate the pituitary to signal to the thyroid gland. It produces one called thyrotropin-releasing hormone, which stimulates thyroid-stimulating hormone production from the pituitary. And it also produces somatostatin, which inhibits thyroid-stimulating hormone release from the pituitary. So the hypothalamus sends two signals. It's like an on switch and an off switch to the pituitary gland. So it either tells the pituitary gland to turn on the thyroid or tells the pituitary gland to turn off the thyroid. And it turns out that caffeine directly stimulates the secretion of somatostatin, the turn off signal, at the hypothalamus. So that signals to the pituitary gland to suppress TSH production. And so that results in a decrease in both the prohormone T4, and then because there's less T4 around, you get less T3. So caffeine has this sort of double whammy effect on the thyroid. And it's why caffeinated beverages are generally a bad idea for anybody with low thyroid function, even if it's not Hashimoto's thyroiditis, like even if it's just subclinical low thyroid due to stress or inadequate sleep or, you know, the other things that can suppress thyroid function. And what was super nerdy, interesting for me about this was that I started drinking coffee every day when I was 14, and I actually drank black tea before that. I do not actually remember a time when I was not allowed to drink caffeinated beverages. But I know, okay, by the time I was 14, I was getting up before my parents to go to school. So they didn't actually know that I was bringing an entire pot of coffee with me to school. So that's not my parents' fault. But at the age of 14, which was also when I started gaining a lot of weight, was when I started using coffee as a crutch. And I have wondered, although I'll never be able to test, if one of the reasons why my thyroid-stimulating hormone has always been normal is because of the large amount of caffeine that I have always consumed, whether through coffee or the periods of time in my life where I've given up coffee, I've always drank a lot of black tea. So that was just my nerdy link between caffeine and the thyroid.
Sweet. Just a dovetail on the coffee podcast we had the other day. Don't do it, man.
Well, I mean, I think it's okay as an occasional treat.
So
in moderation.
People have been asking for an alternative to coffee, and I mentioned previously that I really enjoyed Brook Cacao, and you mentioned that it had caffeine in it. So I will tell you that my new, like, obsession, and that's punny when I tell you the rest of this joke in a minute, but I didn't mean it to be, is the herbal, quote-unquote, coffee from Delicious Obsessions. Have you heard about this?
I actually just had one of my assistants email me yesterday about it.
You need to get on that. It is delicious, especially if you... if you make it like a butter coffee, and I'm using quotation marks with that, but you can blend ghee into it, or like I put a little bit of grass-fed heavy cream into it, or whatever you can tolerate, or even I'm sure if you drink it without it, it would still be delicious. But it's not 100% like coffee. Nothing that you ever drink is going to be like coffee. And I know that you have your own blend in the Paleo Approach, but
my own blend in the Paleo Approach sounds extremely similar to Delicious Obsessions.
And this is something I can just buy.
Right. And then it's really easy. You don't have to do anything to
right.
make
it. And it just magically appears, and it's wonderful.
You don't have to mix anything. Right.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing it out that the Paleo Approach cookbook has a recipe for herbal coffee in it that has the same ingredients list as Delicious Obsessions.
Sweet. So you can make your own. You can buy the Delicious Obsession ones. But I will tell you that I have switched over to that because I don't drink a lot of coffee, but I drink a lot of decaf coffee. And after our coffee episode, you made me feel really guilty about drinking my decaf coffee. And so I've been using this as when I don't want the occasional coffee that I do have as like my treat that tastes like coffee and makes me feel like I'm having that special moment. And I can personally attest to loving it. And I think that if you mention Sarah or I or whatever, you get like a free ebook from her as well. But having nothing to do with that, I am personally in love with this stuff.
That actually sort of reminds me to answer like an FAQ about when I talk about caffeine and its negative impacts on adrenal glands or thyroid function, like the natural first question is, so does that mean decaf is okay? And I'll refer people back to our coffee themed podcast from not that long ago. But coffee has inflammatory compounds and anti-inflammatory compounds in it. And in the decaffeination process, it strips out caffeine, but also strips out a large amount of the anti-inflammatory compounds in it, leaving the inflammatory ones. So decaf coffee is actually more inflammatory than regular coffee. And regular coffee is still inflammatory when consumed on a daily basis, but decaf is even more so. And the health benefits of coffee are sort of universally not seen with decaf. So, if you're really sensitive to caffeine, having an occasional cup of decaf is probably fine. It would not be something that I would recommend for daily consumption.
Good. I'm glad we covered that because I see that all the time as well.
Yeah. I was like, you totally reminded me of this question that about 6,000 people have right now, and I should just answer it.
Yes.
Let's do some questions.
Excellent day.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Karen says, "Hi, ladies. I have two quick questions. I have Hashimoto's and have been following an autoimmune protocol for a few months now and haven't seen any improvements. I was hoping to gain more energy and drop some weight. I'm ready to reintroduce some foods, but I'm not sure what to look for as far as negative reactions to the foods. It's not like I would break out in a skin rash when I eat eggs or get acne with cheese. So my symptoms of Hashimoto's are not immediate, slow weight gain, slow increases in lethargy, hair slowly falling out, etc. What is the best way to tell if I can add back in some of my favorite foods like chocolate, coffee, and butter. Also, since I'm avoiding dairy, is the fermented cod liver oil butter oil blend from Green Pastures okay to take? Or should I take fermented cod liver oil without the butter?
All right, I'll answer the easy one at the end there, which is that when I was in the autoimmune condition, I was very restrictive of everything that was on the no list, including fermented cod liver oil. So I did not take the butter oil blend. I took the fermented cod liver oil in the cinnamon, and I put 1 teaspoon or tablespoon or whatever it is into a half-filled shot glass with water, and I literally shot it back, and it was the only way that I could tolerate it, because the butter blend is more of like a gel that you can put on the back of your throat and just kind of slop down, but the oil is literally like an oil. You're going to maybe address the particular Hashi's side of it, but you know, I would go with the recommendation that we always have with people about reintroduction of autoimmune, which is that if you're not seeing improvement in your symptoms, whatever your symptoms are, then it's not time for reintroduction. And coming up with an idea of how you feel or how you react to these foods before you start slowly adding them back in one at a time is essential. And I think Sarah talked about some of the things that maybe she can recommend you look for, like the impact to your sleep and your energy levels and things like that, that would make a big impact. But again, if you're not seeing improvement yet in things that you would want to see improvement on in your autoimmune conditions, then it's time to not only continue the autoimmune protocol, but do the things that Sarah and I alluded to earlier, which are incorporate those nutrient-dense superfoods and lifestyle factors, which are often what people leave off their list, or they're not being super careful about eliminating the elimination foods. But I don't know how many times, Sarah, we're going to have to tell people to eat the quote-unquote yucky stuff, but it really does make a crazy, huge difference. It is like not even the same. And maybe I can attest to my own, you know, improvement in managing my autoimmune diseases, which I know are digestive in nature. I have celiac disease, and we have this other thing that I can never remember that Sarah did a science segment on, which has to do with my intestinal tract continuing to have higher permeability. So that is why specifically I do so well with broth, because it helps heal and nourish my intestines in a way that other foods that are harder to digest can't do. If I don't eat those nutrient-dense foods, specifically organ meat and broth, for me are big. I eat vegetables all the time. Even when I'm eating bad, I crave vegetables. So that's never an issue for me. But I have to remember to eat seafood, but I don't notice as big of a difference with seafood as I do with organ meat and broth being key to feeling good. Like I notice my energy levels drop when I don't have organ meat, and I notice my joints and my energy levels and my skin, my digestive function all deteriorate when I don't have broth. So I do get breakouts if I eat terrible dairy or nightshades or something like that, but I don't have like huge triggers either. I've just learned to really listen to my body carefully, and I've learned what, you know, my ideal health feels and looks like. And then when I start feeling it deviate from that, I know that I need to get back on track. So I started this out by saying that I wanted to attest to my success, which is that in doing the autoimmune protocol in the beginning and not adding the nutrient-dense foods, I saw minor improvement, but not the kind of thing that was worth what I was going through with it, to be honest with you. And it wasn't until I kind of had like a bang my head on the wall moment with Sarah, and she was like, well, you know, are you doing the lifestyle factors and the nutrient-dense food section of the protocol? And I had to admit that I wasn't really focused on that. I was like, well, of course, I mean, I eat grass-fed beef 2 to 3 times a week. You know, I'm like, that's not going to cut it. It's just not going to cut it. If you're trying to heal, your body is nutrient deficient and you have to oversupplement. And especially with someone like me who has impaired digestive function for autoimmune reasons, I don't have a gallbladder, there's several reasons my digestive function just doesn't perform well. It's even more important for me to get those nutrients in because my body isn't absorbing everything I'm giving it. So I have to give it more nutrients than it even needs in order for it to get what it does need.
Okay, so you mostly answered what I would have was going to answer. For people who are looking for a full guideline on how to reintroduce foods, Chapter 9 in the Paleo Approach is completely dedicated to how to introduce them, what to look for, which foods to start with. And so it's completely guidelines into that. But you know, it's one of the things that I wish I could tell people that, oh, you just do the autoimmune protocol for 30 days, then you can start reintroductions. And I can't because it's incredibly variable. And so what I say is you wait until you're starting to feel better. And if you're not feeling better, there's still some tinkering that needs to get done. But in terms of what symptoms to look for, so it's any symptoms of your disease returning or worsening. But that's not the only thing to look for. So you can look for any gastrointestinal symptoms, tummy ache, changes in bowel habits, heartburn, nausea, constipation, diarrhea, increased or decreased frequency of bowel movements, gas, bloating, undigested or partly digested food particles in the stool. Looking for reduced energy, fatigue, energy dips in the afternoon, food cravings for sugar or fat, desire for caffeine, pica, which is cravings for minerals, so sometimes non-food items like wanting to eat dirt or clay or sand. Trouble sleeping, and that would be either falling asleep or staying asleep or just not feeling rested in the morning. Or if you have something like a Fitbit, you can measure how much you're tossing and turning at night and get a really good quantitative measure of your sleep quality. Headaches, and that's anything from a mild to like full-blown migraine. Dizziness or lightheadedness, anything that's kind of like a symptom of a cold. So increased mucus production, phlegm, coughing, runny nose, postnasal drip, the need to clear your throat, itchy eyes or mouth, sneezing, any kind of aches and pains. So that's muscle, joint, tendon, ligament, any kinds of changes in skin. So, you know, with Hashimoto's, that might be dry skin or dry hair or brittle nails, but also anything like rashes, acne, little tiny pink bumps or spots, mood issues. So that could be mood swings, feeling lower depressed, feeling less able to handle stress, feeling increased anxiety. And like any one of those symptoms could be showing you that you're not responding well to a food. And it's why you don't do food reintroductions when you're stressed or when you haven't had enough sleep or when you have a cold, because then you can't separate out the symptom that you're having from the food versus the symptom that you're having from some other thing happening in your life. And it's why, you know, when you are somebody who has these very mild, hard to notice symptoms, it's why keeping a food journal is so important. So you can look back and say, well, okay, I'm starting to see more hair come out in my brush. What did I introduce 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago that could be causing that now? So keeping a journal and a journal that's food reintroduction and then also symptoms. And because most like food intolerance and sensitivity symptoms are going to be on the order of days afterwards compared to allergy symptoms, which are much more immediate. Next question.
Mm-hmm.
So our next question is from Diana. What a blessing to find you. I have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Maybe. He's a very aggressive doctor in treating minor symptoms because I complained of weight gain, cold hands and feet, and thinning hair. And possibly at the beginning of menopause. Again, maybe. I would like to go off the levothyroxine, at which is T4, and the thyronine, which is T3. Would the autoimmune protocol help in place of medication, since I never really saw any difference in the 2 years of meds? I've altered my doses many times with no change. And how would you suggest I transition if the answer is yes?
I'm going to let you tackle that one.
So this is one of those things that I mentioned before about You know, there's as much as Hashimoto's thyroiditis is greatly underdiagnosed, there's also this group of people who are being diagnosed with hypothyroidism based on symptoms and not based on test results. And I really think that an accurate diagnosis needs to keep both the actual numbers and the symptoms in mind, because there's other things that can be causing, can be suppressing the thyroid that's not an autoimmune disease. So it could be stress or not getting enough sleep or nutritional deficiencies in the diet. You know, no matter what it is, though, I think that focusing on an anti-inflammatory diet like the autoimmune protocol, focusing on stress management, increased sleep, and having fun and laughing, you know, I think those things for a period of time are still helpful. I mean, at the worst, you've sort of given up some great foods for a little while. But I would never just go off my meds and start the autoimmune protocol. Like, no matter how much you think the meds aren't important. And one of the things about being on T4 and T3 is that there is this negative feedback mechanism to the pituitary gland. So when you have a lot of T3 in your system, it's telling your pituitary gland to suppress thyroid stimulating hormone. So there's this feedback system. So even if you maybe never needed those hormones as medications in the first place, they are affecting your body now. So it's not just a question of just going off. And I don't actually know the doses well enough to know if those are small doses, medium doses, high doses that she gave us. So I would definitely, what I would suggest doing is talking with your doctor about weaning off, which has to be done extremely slowly at the same time as you're doing the autoimmune protocol, but really, really focusing on the lifestyle stuff, because this might have nothing to do with suppressed thyroid. It might have everything to do with stress, or it might have to do with just generalized inflammation. And you want to be able to put yourself in the best case scenario for seeing effects and not having a crash because you've just stopped your medication. So when people are on other medications like methotrexate or steroids or other disease modifying drugs, which you know, are specifically targeting the immune system rather than like supporting a damaged organ. So that's sort of a different class of drugs for autoimmune disease. So there's drugs that target the immune system and suppress the immune system. And then there's drugs that support a failing organ, like insulin would support a failing pancreas, for example. When you're talking about a disease modifying drug, you know, I always tell people to do the autoimmune protocol, get the lifestyle stuff dialed in, really have that down perfect, and then work with their doctor to slowly wean off and really focus on tons and tons and tons of sleep while you're doing it, because sleep is the most important thing you can do for normalizing the body while you're going through a shift like that. When it comes to hormone replacement, you know, I generally recommend that people get tested frequently, see how they're doing, see if they need it. When you're taking a drug without having done that testing in the first place, it's really, really hard to use testing to see where you're at. But generally, you know, if somebody is sort of newly diagnosed with Hashi's and they want to use diet and lifestyle to try and get off their medication, you know, one of the things I say is you need to test. And then you need to be working with a doctor. And then you need to be fully prepared for the fact that there could be permanent damage to your thyroid, or whatever other organ we're talking about, if it's, you know, adrenal glands, if it's Addison disease, or pancreas, if it's type 1 diabetes. There's very likely permanent damage to that organ, which might mean you can reduce your dose of your medication once you stop attacking that gland and part of it can heal. But there may be scarring, there may be permanent damage that you're not going to get back. And in that case, what the autoimmune protocol is doing is it's stopping it from getting worse. It's stopping it from fully killing that organ, and it's stopping your immune system from developing new autoimmune diseases and attacking new tissues in your body. So there's still a great advantage to it, even if you're going to have to continue taking your, you know, hormone replacement or your organ support medication. So it's definitely a tricky thing, and it definitely needs to be done with medical supervision.
You got it.
All right.
I got nothing.
Okay. So I think that's it for like Hashimoto's themed show in celebration of my Hashimoto's diagnosis, because why not?
Celebration is a bit of an awkward word, but
just a little bit.
I'm sure that we will have more to share in the future as Sarah uncovers more about her diagnosis and the healing process. But in the meantime, you know, I again want to thank you for your honesty and openness. And I'm sure that there are many people listening who are appreciating this, or even people who specifically download this episode because it's a health condition they have that, you know, can be helped by the paleo lifestyle, helping them manage their own disease. So thank you again on behalf of everybody, Sarah.
Thank you.
And I have full confidence that you will be employing your own techniques to heal. I'm really proud of you and happy to hear that you're postponing some of your tour stops and focusing on, you know, stress relief and spending time with family and stuff. Because as your friend, I know that you really need that.
So. Yeah, I do. And it's nice.
Excellent.
I'm going to go now and keep reading Divergent. What, number 3.
Awesome.
Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I'm only trying to think of a segue.
There's no segue. We'll just go to music.